This is
Two Writers
Talking Shit.
Hi, Saeed.
How are you doing?
Oh my God, I'm doing absolutely amazing. I thought we might be able to give a shout out to one of our amazing listeners who's left us not only five stars, but a beautiful review.
Would you like to go ahead and do that?
You know what? I will. Thank you.
Please let them get their props.
He is a gentleman. Okay. It's called Inspiring. Already used the advice I got from the Len Chen episode.
Len Chen.
Lifelong friend. I'm glad that I could call her Len. You can do this. A really generous interview on the part of both of the hosts and the guests. Very much enjoy the Melanie Saeed banter too. I won't be missing an episode. And that's from SVB Voiceworks. So shout out.
Shout out SVB Voiceworks. And please leave more comments because we will definitely give you your shout outs. We appreciate it. Spread the show.
Spread it wide. That's what he said.
That's what he said. today, we have another friend of mine, Alexandra Tran.
Hi.
How are you doing? First off, how did we meet? Was it through...
We met through your industriousness, which I'm sure is how most people on this show come to meet you. But you reached out to me because you were looking at signing with a couple managers.
Yeah.
And there was one who was at my management company.
Yeah.
And so you were curious about my experience with the company overall and just any tips or tricks I had about evaluating managers. And I wrote you back this long, like 3,000 word email, like, here's what to look for, massive red flags, because I had been burned before. And you were like, yo, this is the best, thank you.
Yeah, it was.
And you ended up signing with Zach, and then you just kept in touch. And I gotta tell you, I actually have taken your method now, and I keep in touch with people regularly because of the way you do it. But now, a couple years later, we're friends.
I know. It's funny because we met in person right before COVID.
Yes, that's right.
So here's the funny thing.
Oh, my God.
We saw each other one time, and then, the whole world ended, like, a few months later. So, I came out to L.A., and she was one of the people that I reached out to, obviously, because we both signed at Bellevue. But, she was the coolest. I met with her. I met with Ben Watkins at the same time when I came out here. Amazing showrunner. And then the world ended. 2 months later. But we stayed in contact and definitely met you from Twitter.
Yeah, you met me from Twitter. That's right. Yeah.
Super.
That's where Saeed meets all his friends.
Screenwriter
Twitter is such a wealth of information and contacts. Don't sleep on it.
It's alive and popping.
It might soon be Screenwriter Spoutable or something. We'll see where everyone lands,
Elon took my blue check.
I mean, at this point, you kind of want it taken, don't you?
No, I'm not paying for it. That's the thing. No. When it's up there, people think you pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't want that.
No,
so.
I'm not paying for it.
No, check marks are for jokers.
No, check marks are for jokers. But recently, congratulations, you were on The Blacklist.
Thank you, yes.
The coveted.
Ooh,
coveted annual Blacklist,
the annual, not the website.
That's right, the annual Blacklist.
The Blacklist, because anybody can kind of get on the website. You might not do well on the website. Mm-hmm.
And I did not, I should tell you.
I didn't do that well either. We'll talk about that. Yeah. But what was the name of the script? And give us a little bit about what the script is.
The script is called It's a Wonderful Story, which granted, I know, sounds kind of Hallmark. But it's that title because it's the biopic of the making of It's a Wonderful Life. Which I'd wanted to write for a long, long time, one of my favorite movies, and I could never figure out how to do it until we went through COVID-19. And then I wrote it in the pandemic. We got it out, I want to say, fall of 2021, and then, 2022, rather. Mm-hmm. And then The Blacklist came out, and it's my first time on The Blacklist, so very excited about that. And I have a director attached, and we're trying to figure out the financing.
Are you allowed to drop the director's name?
I don't think I can.
Okay.
But I can tell you a great story about how she found it.
Please. We need all the stories.
Okay. So when you make The Blacklist, there usually tends to be a bit of heat on you for a while, right? Mm-hmm. And this project had a couple different companies that were interested. And so I met with them, and there were a few where there were notes I didn't quite like, or a few months happened and their interest cooled. And all of a sudden, one day, I get a DM in my Twitter inbox, and it's from someone I don't know, back when check marks were still a thing.
Yeah.
And I opened it real quick and this person said, hey, did you write It's a Wonderful Story? And I said, yes. And they go, oh my God, I just read it. I cried three times. What's happening with it? And I said, well, at the moment it's available. And this director, world class, you would know this director, goes, great, I want to make it. I can get it financed too.
Wow.
Via Twitter.
Oh my
I had to screenshot it because I was like, this might go away at some point. I got to keep this for posterity.
I just got chills.
And then they go, are you around right now? Do you want to chat? Just WhatsApp me. And so they were in London. It was like 9 p.m. They were flying out the next morning, but we talked for an hour. And they were like, yeah, I have like one quick note about like one scene, like half a page worth maybe of stuff. But otherwise, it's perfect. Let's go for it.
Fuck yeah.
And they start naming all these different, you know, A-list actors. And I'm just there pinching myself like, is this really happening right now?
Through Twitter.
Via Twitter. And so they had been to Sundance and they were doing press for like the anniversary of a film they had had there years before. And someone asked them, what's your favorite movie? And they said, It's a Wonderful Life.
Wow.
So later at a party, someone approaches them and said, hey, did you hear there's a Blacklist script about It's a Wonderful Life? And guess what? The writer is Asian. Joke for all the listeners. I am, my last name is Tran because I'm married to a wonderful man named Tran, but I am not actually Asian. So,
oh my God. That was disappointment.
Yeah,
I know. So when we WhatsApp and they were like, oh, you're not Asian after all. And I go, no, I'm actually black and Polish, but you know.
Oh my gosh.
That's funny. Yeah. I have a confession. I've never seen It's a Wonderful Life.
Well, this coming holiday season, you should.
Have you seen it, Saeed?
I have seen it. It is a classic movie.
That's his review.
So a little slow at times, potentially.
Okay. You know what? It's going on my list.
Add that to like the 50 movies you have to see.
Well, yeah.
Up there with, there's another one too, Casablanca. You seen Casablanca?
Yeah, I have seen that one.
All right.
Thanks.
There's a scene in Casablanca where the piano player has a chance, who's black, by the way, has a chance to leave for his freedom. And you know what he says? No, boss, I want to sit here with you. I said, wow.
Yeah.
I said, man, this is a little problem.
In the middle of a war, too.
In the middle of a war. Like, nah, boss.
In North Africa. Yeah.
In North Africa, which I thought was interesting. But your take of It's a Wonderful Life and this thing, it focuses differently, right?
It's not a straight biopic. Yeah. It's actually a metaphor or an allegory for going through the pandemic.
That's fine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh
because
my God. Did you say allegory?
I did.
Listen.
No one on this podcast.
I might actually be a novelist. Has
Are you a novelist?
No.
She might be.
It's not too late. We're writing novels.
Are you?
Saeed and I, separately, but also possibly jointly.
I mean, the skills transfer. But yeah, it's so basically the director, Frank Capra, and the star, Jimmy Stewart, both came out of their World War II experience like deeply scarred. And Frank Capra, if you're familiar with his work, he's really the guy who makes like the really life-affirming, like, corny kind of movies, you know, about like, the little guy always wins and the bad guy always loses. And then he comes out of World War II and all the horror thereof and was really shaken by it. And he wanted to make this one final movie to be like, all right, if I do nothing else with my career, I'll put out something good into the world after what we've all kind of collectively been through. But of course, Jimmy Stewart has been so shaken by his experience that nothing really feels like nothing about acting feels real or like worthwhile to him anymore. And he wants to quit acting. And so he signs on for one more movie because they're really good friends and he'll do as a favor for Frank Capra, but he struggles the whole way through until he learns to embrace that darkness and move through it. And they, of course, have lots of ups and downs as the movie comes out and has the reception they didn't expect. And then everything changes and it becomes the work that they're both most known for and it's timeless and everlasting.
That's dope. Is it true that you didn't know you were on the list? Did somebody
tweet
you?
This is true.
Like, because I remember, so what's funny is I remember, and that's the weird thing about the Blacklist is like you do think like, oh, I'll know if I'm on there. But like literally, I think I remember, and this is how kind she is, like she's reposting somebody else. She's like, congrats, you got it. And somebody comments like, no, you're on the list.
Yeah.
Like, I was dying. I was reading through like, wait a minute, you didn't know you were on the list? Like, that's hilarious.
I knew the morning the list was coming out And so I just tweeted like, hey, congrats to all the Blacklist 22 people. Like, so what supportive. A great job. Like, congratulations. Can't wait to read them. And then I closed my computer and went about my day. And I came back a few hours later and my mentions are blowing up. Yeah. And somebody was like, yo, it's you. And I was like, oh, shit, I had no idea.
Oh, my God.
Reminds me of Mel. Like, both of y'all are just the best and, like, you know what I mean? Like, good people. Like, and oh, super supportive. You.
It's because she's Asian adjacent.
That's what it has been. Worn off it's on the her. Last name.
She took the last name. She has to take on the attributes of the people, you know?
If you knew my maiden name, you would understand. My maiden name is 13 letters long. Tran was a real upgrade.
Oh, my God. What was the writing process like for this script?
It was rough.
Tell us about it.
Okay, so...
Now, were you sequestered during this time with your family?
Yeah, I was with family, and I had a baby in COVID, too.
Oh, my God.
I had a COVID baby, so I had, like, he was maybe, like, a year old when I began to write this script, and he was... I love him to death, but he's a difficult baby.
Was he your first baby?
Yes.
So you had your first baby during COVID.
I had my first
COVID.
Baby. Mm-hmm. We got pregnant 2 weeks into lockdown.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wow. What a time. What a time.
What a time.
And so, yeah, I began to write this. He was about a year old. And I had done all the research years before, read, you know, a couple of biographies and autobiographies, and thought I had this all planned out. I had a great beat sheet. My manager loved it. She was like, yeah, go for it. I thought, tight 3 months, easy. It ended up being a year to write that script. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because I'm tracking two different characters' growths, right? Mm-hmm. There's Frank Capra and there's Jimmy Stewart. And I was trying to give both of them, you know, your kind of typical hero's journey arc of transformation. And it came out as double beats and it was undermining each other the whole way through. And we did draft after draft and we couldn't figure out what was wrong. And then one day, I'm watching Paddington 2 with my son. And I had that, like, bold moment of, like, oh, one of them, Frank Capra, needs to be Paddington.
Wow.
And by that, I mean he needs to be the character who does not change.
Right.
He's the, like, the North Star by whom everyone else changes.
Mm.
So one more draft, and that was the one. That was it.
Mm.
What's interesting about that is that life happens. And so was... Like, whenever I get stuck, right, on scripts and even upcoming writers out there listening, like, you have to sometimes just live life and then the answers will come and kind of put it away. Like, you know what I mean? And I think that's super dope that, like, for you, it's like you had a kid. Because of this kid, you're
watching Paddington.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And Paddington revealed to you the key. And it's funny because I always tell people, like, I feel like writing a script is almost like a figuring out a puzzle. Like, you know what I mean?
You're
like,
both designing and solving the puzzle at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a
That's
trip.
What makes it so hard.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? And you never know where that one piece, like, because you can stand, like, just like a puzzle. Like, sometimes you'll stand above it. You'll look at the side. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, man, I don't know. Walk
Have
away.
You ever done a puzzle?
Do it? Funny you should ask.
I wish the audience could really see the act out that he did there. You know, he was really like crossed his arms. He's like, ooh, furrow the eyebrow, look at the puzzle, you know?
During COVID.
Go on.
I bought puzzles.
How many pieces?
I mean, literal book puzzles.
Okay.
Like, I was doing crosswords
like Sudoku
and shit.
Puzzles
I was doing like, Payless grandma.
Okay,
crossword, Safeway
you
puzzles.
You gotta keep the mind sharp. You gotta keep the mind sharp.
I thought we were gonna be in this shit forever.
Yeah.
And I bought like about 5 puzzles, you know? And I mean, start one may have been 25 pieces.
Oh.
Then I worked up to the bigger pieces. But yeah.
Baby Tram could have done a 25-piece puzzle.
Definitely could. But you know, you gotta work your way up.
Did you do like any cities? Paris, 1,000 pieces?
No, I don't think I did any cities, but it was just like, I don't know. It was like paintings, like art.
Mm-hmm,
it was, I was
beautiful.
Like rebuilding art.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful time.
Listen.
Yes.
Paddington held the key.
Paddington held the key.
Everyone should see Paddington 2. It is a perfect movie.
That's what people say.
It is.
I've heard that too.
Yeah.
And honestly, you go for Paddington, but you stay for Hugh Grant in his best Hugh Grant villain era. I hear, actually someone told me that when they pitched the script to him, the character that he plays, the name was Hugh, because it was like, this is actually you, man. Like, it's all the stuff people say about you, about like your worst side. They change it for the movie. Maybe it was never really the case, but it's his best work. I put my hands down.
Is Paddington 2 the one that has the tea scene with the queen?
No.
Is that Paddington
3? That's the first one.
I think.
Well, no, I'm just saying. Maybe you're confused.
I haven't yet seen a Paddington 3, but there's no tea with the queen in the second one.
It's the first one.
Oh, it's the first one?
Yeah, that's
Have you seen Paddington 1?
I don't think I have.
Okay. Well, we could just skip it, it sounds like.
Obviously, you could skip the first one and watch the second.
It's not just number two.
It's not necessary to watch number one to understand what's going on in number two.
No.
Okay.
But what's funny, though, is that people also say to watch Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
For, like, story structure also.
Dude, I tell people all the time. I tell people... You watch like 90s Disney movies for story structure because there is not a single wasted moment in any of those. It's pure hero's journey in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Everything from every song to everything you see, like it's perfect, all of them.
And I think that's key and different than what people, because most time when you're writing a script, people be like, watch a movie that you're in the style that you're writing. So, like, you're watching all these other movies and, like, you know, you're making a thriller, you're making a comedy, rom-com, you're watching all these rom-coms. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you're having structural problems, you might want to go to Finding Nemo or Paddington 2. So, y'all get out there and go rent that.
No, I also find that it's, because I'll do the same thing. Like, let's say I'm writing a road trip movie. Did I pitch on a road trip movie? Did I get passed over for the road trip movie? I absolutely did. But so I'm watching all these road trip movies, and what I actually found more inspiration was in other areas. You know, because it's like you're looking too closely, and you're like, what's the same? What's the same? What's the same? And it's like, I think actually those moments of inspiration strike when, like, you go to the cinema and you're just watching whatever you want to watch. Or, like, you go to a concert and, like, you're listening to music and then it's like, you're like, oh my God, I gotta make notes on my phone. You know, at the Hollywood Bowl or whatever. Gotta get out there and cultivate your garden.
I agree. Totally agree.
I agree. Which is the opposite of what writers usually want to do.
Exactly.
Like, we want to be huddled up inside.
Like, if you sit down and you want to watch, you want to write a rom-com and you just watch 20 rom-coms, what you're going to come out with is, like, an AI version of an amalgamation of all those rom-coms.
Talk on it.
Right? That's exactly what you'll do. And you'll be able to see, like, oh, this character sounds a bit like Kimmy from My Best Friend's Wedding. And this one sounds like, you know, so-and-so from whatever. And that's how it will be. But if you go out and you live your life and you see something and it inspires you and suddenly you'll hear a song and the whole kind of plot plays open in your mind, suddenly you have a fresh take on something.
Or just get on a dating app for a month and then you'll have all the stories you need.
anything you want to tell us, are you?
One thing I do want to talk about.
You see
about
how
is,
he just moved right along? he just didn't even acknowledge me.
One thing I promise is I'm definitely not bringing my dating life into this podcast. But what I do want to ask you is, what was the first script that got you buzz or heat? Or you felt like, this is different. Like, what was that? And is this the one that got you a manager too?
No, they are different scripts.
Please.
So the first one that got me some buzz is a feature that I wrote called Black Girls Don't Swim, which was, I read some article about these Somali American teenage girls in Minnesota who are joining swim teams and like sports teams for the first time and how it's been this big kind of cultural shock. And they've had to make a lot of changes to make it possible, both like from the sports side and from the family side. And I just thought, that's something I know really well. Like, I'm biracial, I'm multicultural, I'm always that person with like a slightly different skew in every room that I'm in. And I thought, oh, I know what these girls are going through, trying to maintain their identity and their culture, but also be the all-American girl. So I wrote that script and I actually, I finished it like into the wee hours the day before it was due for a contest.
That's where I first saw you.
Is that what it was?
It was the BET.
It was BET's Project Create, the very first one.
I remember that contest.
Yeah. I flew home from my uncle's funeral and I was up with my cousins all night, you know, crying and laughing. And then I was up until 5 a.m. before the funeral to finish that script and submit it. And I ended up in the top five of that contest. So I got to, and the whole thing was about like, show us a side of the Black experience we haven't seen before that it can be made for under $1 million as a feature film. So I pitched to all these different people and it was a great experience. Good thing I didn't win, though, because it turns out I am not a director. So that was good to learn. And the guy who did win totally deserved it. Good friend of mine still. And so that was the script that kind of gave me like the whole idea that, okay, I am still, I'm now like at the right level to attract attention. And then guess what?
What?
Nothing happened from that script.
Oh,
Like it was crickets. They had the whole, you know, press release thing. They filmed like a behind the scenes reality thing for it. Nothing happened. And so I went back to write a new script and I wrote another stunt spec. And that one was about the creator of the Barbie doll.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Now that alerted you.
Yeah.
A fan of Barbie? Mel, do you Barbie much?
Still mad about the puzzle. Who did invent the Barbie? This is like, I'm learning everything.
This is an incredible story.
Like, so. Alexandra's the smartest person I've ever met. This is like, I'm getting like my GED.
Expedited GED. Crash course.
Getting my BFA. I'm getting my MFA. I might be getting my MBA.
Oh, man.
Okay, go on. Who invented the Barbie?
Well, her name was Ruth Handler. She and her husband started Mattel, the company that we all know and love today.
Yeah.
And here's why I decided to write this story. I read this book. I went to the library, got a book for some bedtime reading.
I
go to my library. Yeah, all the time. I'm a member of the local library. And I go there for everything. Nice. I save so much money. Don't buy, people. Don't buy from Amazon.
And space.
Yeah, and space. Oh, my Lord,
recently moving books, you don't realize how heavy that is.
God, but go ahead. Yes, and then you end up losing them along the way.
Oh, come on, listen.
But so I read this book, and I was like, oh, my gosh, what a great story. And I quickly Googled the rights, because that's what you do now, right? Like, who's developing this? And, of course, at the time, it was with Reese Witherspoon and Bruna Papandrea. But everybody's take on it that I could see was like, oh, it's a woman in business in the 50s, like rah, 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 like taking on the man.
Yeah.
But the story that I read was, here's a woman in the 50s who looks at what's around for her kids. She's got a girl and a boy, Barbara and Kenneth, if you can believe it or not.
No, stop.
Yeah.
Similar much.
That's where Barbie and Ken come from. They're named for her kids.
This is crazy.
And so she looks around and she goes, the boys have all these things that like, allow them to imagine, you know, careers growing up. There's guns, there's cars, there's like fireman outfits, policeman outfits. Girls have one thing, and it's baby dolls. There's nothing else but baby dolls. And she wanted her daughter to think bigger and dream bigger. And she said, well, I'm going to make her a better, bigger, like, you know, cardboard cutout. I'm going to make her a doll where she can role play whatever she wants to be. She can be a nurse. She can be an astronaut. She could be a tennis star. And she makes it for her daughter to imagine, and of course her daughter wants nothing to do with it and is like, Mom, why are you in the office all the time and why are you not home with me the way all the other girls' moms are? And so I wrote it as a mother-daughter drama story. And I put it on the Blacklist website, and before I even had an evaluation, I got one download, and it was from my now manager, Kate Sharp, at Bellevue.
This is what I'm talking about.
Excuse me.
These are the stories you want to hear. Like, you just put it
up. I mean, like, she read it in one night. She called me the next day, and she was like, who are you? What else do you have?
Wow.
And I sent her Black Girls Don't Swim, and she goes, I want to work with you. And she got me. You know, I'd met with some other people who clearly didn't get me, and she got me. And we've been together ever since.
How many years is this after the project create?
This was maybe like a year or two later.
Oh.
But you kept at it.
That's yeah.
Okay. And what was the title of the Barbie script?
What a Doll.
She's good at names. She's good at names of scripts, y'all.
That's fucking good.
It's a great one. And you know what sucks? And here's the truth, too. That's what happens all the time. We were set to go out with it. And the day before we went out, somebody else announced a competing project. And they had the actual Barbara Handler Siegel, so like the survivor of, you know, the estate attached to the project. The day before we went out. So obviously mine is not set up anywhere, but I got at least 60 generals from that script.
That's fire.
At least
60.
That's fire.
Wow. Yes.
Wow.
It went everywhere.
That's fire.
What's the log line?
Oh, I don't even remember. Something like in the 1950s, a housewife risks her, you know, life and family happiness on a dream she calls Barbie.
Oh, that's good.
Something like that.
Oh, that's good.
Thanks.
Let me ask you this. Do you have any advice? Because, you know, like upcoming writers listen to this and they're like, you know, when you're choosing a manager, do you have any advice for them as far as
so like much.
Things to look for?
So much.
Please, could you give us like five?
Yeah. So the first thing is look for their experience and prior credits. Mm-hmm. And I say this from experience because my first manager, and people who don't know should know that the difference between a manager and an agent is that an agent is bonded by the state. They have to be mm-hmm. vouched for by another agent, basically, and they're like a professional, like licensed thing. By contrast, anybody can hang up a shingle off the street, no degree, no requirements, no nothing, and say, I'm a manager.
Right.
And so if you find someone who wants to rep you, but they don't have any produced credits, they don't have any industry experience besides, you know, maybe a couple assistant gigs, they're probably not ready to be a manager yet, and certainly not your manager. So your manager should introduce you with, here's the work that I've done thus far. Here's the clients I've helped secure in, you know, this kind of growth in their career kind of thing. I'm part of this company. They should have something to back them up. Number two, your manager should get you. I met with somebody who read a different script of mine, and his take on it was just so bizarre that I was, and he assumed the sale. He assumed that I was going to sign with him right away because he had reached out to me and liked my work. And I just said, I'm sorry, I don't think we have the same idea about what makes this script special. So your manager has to get you. They have to get what you want to do. If you want to write genre and they only want you to write, you know, like drama, then you're not going to be a good fit.
Right.
Number three, you should want to communicate the same way. If you are looking for someone who's going to check in with you once a week, then you better communicate that and see if they're willing to
do that
with you, right? Like my manager is pretty hands-off on me, and I appreciate that. It's kind of how we like to do it. Mm-hmm. But I know people who prefer to have like a more regular check-in, and so you should be compatible that way. It's like dating, really.
Yeah.
And number five, is there number five? Number five is know when to leave.
Oh, man. That's like the $1 million question. That's like Mel's favorite question. Like, how do you end it?
Well, so I'll tell you.
Here we go, Mel. I'll tell you.
But you know what? You know what I really heard in there? Business opportunity. Alexandra said we could be managers. She literally looked at us and said, any idiot can become a manager, all right?
Send in your scripts to twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com.
No, but actually don't.
Please don't. No unsolicited scripts, please and thank you.
Okay. But how you ended?
Yes. Ahead, yes, so, all right. So my first manager, I was with him for, God, 2 years maybe? And I knew it was time to end it when I could just tell that I had lost all sense of what I thought was good. Because I would write something and he wouldn't respond to it, and like his notes wouldn't make sense to me. And before I knew it, I was like, I'm writing so much worse now than I did a year ago. And I'm going backwards. And so you end it as professionally as possible. You call them up and you, ideally you do it in person. If not, and you do at least do it over the phone. Don't do it via email or text. And you just say, listen, I appreciate all that we've tried to do together, but I feel like this is not working out in the long term for me. I think I need to kind of regroup and readdress what my goals are going forward. So thank you so much. I really appreciate all the time and effort you've put into me, all the sweat equity, but I'm going to move forward on my own thus far.
Sweat equity.
That's the way to do it.
Sweat equity.
Allegory.
PhD.
Do you have a legal background?
No, I don't actually. But it's funny you mentioned that because I am the one, I'm the person who always goes through these programs and finds the things that are wrong with their contracts and then makes them change them.
Yeah. So everybody
past life.
Yeah. Everybody needs an Alexandra. I would like to share with our listeners a little bit of transparency about the blacklist. We are talking about the blacklist that she placed on, not the blacklist where you can create a login and like just anybody with a PDF can just throw it on up there. I mean, I can only speak to the blacklist of today, 2023. I can't speak to like the blacklist in its original inception or anything, but a really important thing to know is that, I mean, of course your script does have to be good, right? But there's a reason why you see the same managers, clients on the blacklist year after year. And that's because those managers are campaigning for their clients. So it's like, it's executives voting on these scripts for the blacklist. And when it gets to be that time of the year, these managers who have hopes that their clients will place on it will call up these executives and say, hey, you know, it's time for voting. We'd really love it if you would consider like voting for this client script. So I just do think it is important to share that because that's the truth of the matter. You are very unlikely to get on the blacklist without any representation unless you have a lot of friends who are execs.
Although someone did this last year.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
it is possible. It's rare, but it is possible.
And the other thing is it's like, it's execs voting on these scripts, right? So you can't just think to yourself, I've written this amazing script. It's right here on my computer. Or like, you know, I put it up on the blacklist. Like maybe it'll end up on the blacklist. Like that's not happening.
No, that's the only reason, the scripts that are considered are the ones that are specifically taken to the companies by reps. So by agents and managers. If your agent and manager is not submitting them to these companies, they are not under consideration. So you put your script on the blacklist website to hopefully get, you know, mm-hmm. your high level score and attract a manager, attract an agent, things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as sending it out with a team behind it.
Exactly. Just good to know. It's just good to know. I mean, don't give up. Keep on plugging.
I mean, I didn't even get to tell you, but the script that I had on the blacklist, my What a Doll script, it never got more than a 6.
Listen,
oh. I've never had more than a 6 on the blacklist ever.
Listen, my pilot that ended up getting me a manager, I think it got like 7, 7, 6, 6, 7, 7. But it would always be
weird.
Was
that flip?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It would always be weird because it would have like this really good like.
Yes.
This show could sell. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I'm like, why the fuck is it getting a 6?
That's what mine did too.
But what's funny though is the thing I did is I used the black, and y'all out there can do this. I used the quotes from the blacklist in my query letter. Mm-hmm. So it'd be like, authentic voice, blase, blase, blah. Mm. I'm not telling you what
Smart.
It scored. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Good strategy,
but,
yeah.
But, and you can go look. Now, it might show up as a 7. Most of these people ain't going to mm-hmm. fucking look. But, like, if you get a 7 or a 6 on the blacklist, it's a really good script, really.
Yes.
Because they only give out 8s very rarely. And I don't, 9s and 10s, forget about it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. So, and even if you get a 6, you might still attract someone's attention because 100%. They might say, oh, okay, well, there's potential here that mm-hmm. I can work with and we can get it to that level where it could really start to sell and make some noise.
Yeah.
And that's what happened for me and a lot of people that I know.
Yeah. No, and they had good feedback too. I remember, I think I did mine a little too early. Like I think I came right out of UCLA program or whatever online and I was like, let me throw this shit up on the blacklist. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. It's like a 6? Like, holy shit. But the, you know, they gave like good feedback and like, and I used some of that to get it in a better place. Then I took it down mm-hmm. and then I used it to query and started like, once I started placing in contests, I think there is one thing that's true. And from all the people that sit here, even your story, it's like, look, if you're not placing in shit, you really need to think about reworking your script or mm-hmm. writing another one. Because I do feel like, yeah, the first year I was entering didn't place mm-hmm. and shit. But then I started placing all the fucking time. Mm-hmm. Or I got this one. And it just, so if you're not placing, you really need to look inside and do some better work on this script or do another one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think once you start placing, that does reflect that you are in a spot where you can start querying people and like sending that script out. It's just facts.
Mm-hmm.
Go watch Paddington 2.
And
get inspired.
Finding Nemo.
Oh.
Did you go to college?
I did. Not for screenwriting.
How
no.
dare you?
Okay.
But yes, I went to college.
She's like a professor. Okay. We're going to college right now.
I went to Scripps College, which is a little college in the Inland Empire of California. Mm-hmm. Here was my strategy. I'd wanted to write since I was a teenager, and I knew that my parents were not going to support film school. So my goal was, okay, I'm going to get to as close to the action as possible. I'm going to get as close to LA as possible. So I went to Scripps because they had an option to design your own major. Mm. And I didn't really want to spend all my time like reading, like you would in like a traditional English major. I wanted to write more. Mm-hmm. So I designed a major called, I forget the name of my own major. Yeah. No, it was like writing for like modern media markets or something. Wow. Super vague, like means nothing whatsoever.
She created her own
major.
Major.
That's right. I'm signing up for her. You know what happened to me today. In school?
My second year, they said, sir, you need to declare something. Like, you can't just sit here and not have forever. A major. Yeah, yeah. I was undeclared until I was a junior. Listen, I was doing rap music. I was like, it took me 6 years to graduate.
Wow. But you're like my husband. Yeah. Like, you know, like kind of coast through school like, and then like meteoric rise afterwards.
I'm going to take three classes. You know what I'm saying? But
God, you guys.
But no, that's crazy. You created your own.
I created my own major. And then every summer I had an internship in the industry.
Oh, that's
and fun. I got them myself because my school didn't have a film program. Mm. And we didn't have connections to any of the places. So I just called up myself.
How did you get yourself those internships?
Chutzpah. You know, just do it myself. Fun. I was applying through monster.com back in the day.
Monster.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
I interned for the company that produced Children of Men while they were in pre-production of that.
Movie. Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't it though? I changed the name of one of the characters because he was Polish and it wasn't a Polish name.
Oh, wow.
So I changed it.
That's fire.
And it's there in the final product.
That's fire.
And I was the only intern at ICM in the summer of 06 who was not from UCLA or USC.
Okay.
And they were like, how'd you get here? And I just said, well, I just called and I applied.
That's tight.
You got to kind of force your own way sometimes. Mm. And then I had the really great sense to graduate right after the 07 writer's strike.
Oh, my God.
And none of my internship experience mattered because nobody was hiring for anything. And there were people like way more senior who were going for like PA jobs. It was so bad. So I had to pivot. And I was like, well, I can't afford to take an assistant job in the industry because I just can't afford it. So I'm going to my way through other industries and write nights and weekends. Yeah. And that's what I did for a very long time, like maybe 8 years of being an assistant at various, you know, this financial firm, this law firm, this architectural firm. I have a lot of crazy stories, which is probably why I can't watch Succession these days. I experience too much of it in real life.
I feel that.
And then finally, my husband was like, you hate your day jobs and you're like, getting good enough at them that they take up a lot of your time and you can't write. So quit the day job, come work with me.
Come on.
And write in your free time.
Love it.
And a year into doing that is when I began to get some real heat and I really developed my craft.
Come work with me where?
My husband's an entertainer. He's a magician and a game show host.
Get out. Get out.
Male loves
I don't lead with this because he always takes over the conversation. Everyone's like, magic? What? Like, yes, my husband's a magician.
Okay.
We met for the first time at the Magic Castle where he was headlining.
I've heard of that place.
I will take you.
Heard it's amazing.
You were a guest?
He invited me. We met on eHarmony.
That's how you do it. God.
That's how long we've been together.
You are an example of a successful online relationship.
Yes.
See, it could happen for you, Saeed.
Thank you very much.
It could happen.
We're all
I just got to get on eHarmony.
Well, I know.
I don't know if it's still like a thing.
Get on eHarmony.
I don't know if eHarmony is still up.
We're going to check.
Yeah. I don't know if demographic is for them anymore either. When I was doing it, that was the thing you went to when you want something serious, right? Yeah, and I was like, I'm poor. I don't have time to go out to the bars. I got no money.
Okay. So you meet on eHarmony. He says, what are you doing Friday? Why don't you come on? Why don't you put a dress on?
Yeah. Exactly that.
And a high heel.
Yeah.
And get yourself on over to Franklin Avenue to the Magic Castle.
Yes. Come see me. I'm headlining.
Did he let you bring a friend?
He invited me to, but I didn't.
Oh, you came alone?
I'm a confident bitch.
You are a confident bitch. Oh my God. She got her own internship. She went to the Magic Castle by herself.
I know. And I'm
from Chicago. I had never heard of the castle, didn't know anything about it. Did not know the history and how exclusive it is. And so I walk in and they're like, they waived my door charges. There's like a special like leather thing on my reserved seat.
Oh my gosh.
And he gave me the full, you know, 5-star treatment.
So did you go, did you have a drink first? Did you go straight into the theater?
I had a drink. I went into the theater.
What row did you sit in?
Third or fourth, like okay. Right there in the aisle.
Smart. Yeah. You could leave if necessary.
I didn't, because then like the headlining show is always three acts, and he was the last one, mm-hmm. and he's pulling birds out of his jacket, you know, and like making him into a rabbit. That's my actual life now: birds and a rabbit, and like magic props all over my house.
I love that.
But yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. See, this is why I shouldn't bring it up earlier. Now I've got a lot of magic questions.
Now you're about to go to magic
castle. And people ask me, like, do you want to write a magic script? And I'm like, no, because I know too many magicians. Yeah. And they would, I mean, one, it's a very interesting world. A lot of backstabbing and drama, yeah. but yeah. I could never show my face again.
Yeah.
I like that one movie, the first one.
Which one? The first one? What movie? What are you talking about?
It was a magic movie.
The Avengers?
Christopher Nolan one. Yes. The Prestige.
Yes.
All magicians love The Prestige.
Oh, I like The Prestige.
Okay. They like The Prestige and they like The Illusionist.
Okay.
It's a society of secrets, right? And yeah. so you're not supposed to divulge the secrets of the society. Otherwise, right. you're going to be on the outs of the society. The
yes, exactly.
Yeah. You are ruining the magic.
You're ruining the magic.
Yeah.
All right, so when you're in school, you mm-hmm. get out, you're interning, you're writing on the weekends, what was the first script you read, and were you reading a lot of scripts at this time?
Oh, yeah. So at every internship, I basically had full autonomy. I could read whatever I wanted. I read a bunch of stuff at Strike Entertainment, which is no longer a thing, but they produce Children of Men. So I read through their whole development stack. One of the first things I read was... The Dallas Buyers Club. When it was set up with them. So like years before it got made and then moved to a different company.
So this is like an early draft.
This was early draft, nice. Yeah. I read, there was a movie, it's a B movie, but it was an early James Gunn project called Slither.
I remember, I heard about mm-hmm, that.
With yeah, Nathan yeah, Fillion yeah, yeah, starring yeah. in it. And that was like I was like, why are you guys going to make this? This seems like bad on purpose. And they go, mm-hmm. yeah, that's the point. It's like an homage to B movies. And yep. I was like, oh, okay. And then, so at ICM, you could basically print off whatever you wanted. So, I stole so many scripts from ICM. Mm. Just smuggling home in my bag every night. I loved, and I still have, The Pursuit of Happiness, the Will Smith movie. I love that movie. I love anything like a feel-good movie.
That movie was hella good, though.
That was a great movie. Yeah, I printed off things in different genres. I wanted to see how animation was made. So I printed off like the script for Happy Feet. The Penguin movie, bunch of different things. Like now you can find them all online so much easier than you could 20 mm-hmm. years ago. But, what else did I think that I couldn't find? I found my favorites. I found Sense and Sensibility. Mm-hmm. I found Rocky.
Yeah. Which is a dope script though.
Such a great script.
I recently watched that movie. I didn't realize it. It's funny when I watched it. It's been a long time since I watched it, but I was like, this is actually a romance movie.
It is.
And boxing is like the backdrop. I didn't really like, because when you think about Rocky, because all the movies after that are like very much mm-hmm. fight based. Mm-hmm. But like when you watch it, you're like, oh, this is actually him trying to date and what's her name?
Adrian. This like, really you know quiet, very timid woman. Yeah.
Very small movie.
Very small like, movie.
Everything is on one block.
Yeah, it's a very 70s movie. 70s in the pacing and the timing. You can't make those movies today.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that movie a lot. Yeah. It's interesting because when I was in school, when I was out of school and trying to get back into screenwriting, I used to do the same thing. Like at my job at the record store, I would just print out fucking scripts because mm-hmm. it was free paper and ink.
I mean, I still have scripts in my bookshelves with like the ICM cover on them. You know, like fire. Now it's a relic. Mm-hmm. But
that's fine.
But yeah.
Last question about your husband.
Sure.
So when he said, come work with me, were you like holding the hat that the rabbit Mm-mm. comes out of?
Or? Oh, no. I will never be on stage.
Okay. All right.
So basically, we got married in 2015 and we quit my job a year later. And he has a number of tours. He tours colleges. He does like private corporate events. He was looking to branch out into something else. He wanted to do more like kind of corporate speaking type thing and like kind of move away from the smaller gigs. So I wrote him a show.
What?
I wrote him a corporate speaking show called Hocus Pocus Your Focus.
Power couple.
Stop.
This is the shit I'm
Stop.
Talking about.
Stop. Just wait. So
this
it's
the shit I'm talking about.
Hocus Pocus Your Focus.
Yeah. And it's all about how magic is just cognitive science made fun. So for a very nominal fee, he will come to your organization and he will show you bits of magic and explain to you why your brain gets fooled by this and how you can use that knowledge to hack your bad habits, to create good new habits, to do such valuable things as to gain the trust of anybody you meet immediately.
That's fire.
Things like that. And we sold that show when he was on the plane to perform it for a massive government contractor that I can't name. And he was in the air as the COVID lockdown order came. So it set us back a couple of years. And then you can imagine, like, being a magician in the COVID era was really tough. But he pivoted because he's brilliant. And he's been making a living mostly now as a game show host, believe it or not.
That's tight.
Wow.
Quick rapid fire. If you were to start over right now, what are a few things that you would do immediately? Like, if you had to reset your career right now, no blacklist, no manager, what are a few things that you would do right now?
I would be applying to all the TV fellowships, which I'm already doing now anyway.
Yes.
But that's, I think, the only way to get staffed these days.
100%. I am actually preaching this more than anything. The smartest thing I ever did was get out of school, enter contests, fail, put my shit on the blacklist, fail, and then enter fellowships. Like, you need to do that immediately.
I would, yes. I've never entered them before. I felt like, well, I have a manager. I've got agents. I've got a great team. Like, why would I do this?
You're not above it.
No. And now, especially with, like, the mini room thing, like, you need it. You need the, TV is insular. You can break in from anywhere with a great feature script, but TV, forget it. You got to be inside from like the ground up, working your way as a PA or whatever, or you got to be in a program.
Fellowships are the only way. The last
so find a fellowships.
Good.
What else would I do? I'd write an even stuntier spec. Ooh. Like, I would go stuntier than I had been. I wrote these biopics about real people. I'd write something crazy. Mm. I'd write something like Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Love it.
You know, just wild.
Yep. Mm. And then what's the last thing? Would you query sooner? I mean, like, you didn't get yours through a query, but would you try to get a manager sooner, or would you say not?
No, I
relax and just write.
I would relax and just write.
Good advice for y'all out there.
Yeah, I think if you shoot your shot too soon, you kind of burn that bridge.
I agree. You have to be ready for when you're querying.
You have to be ready. Mm-hmm. You have to not be wasting their time.
Yeah. Last question. What are three things you're listening to or watching right now that you love?
Oh, hardest question.
I mean, it could be something you're listening to.
What am I listening to? I mean, I'm listening to Coco Melon every day.
Okay?
I
have two lines.
That's what I listen to. Works.
That's one.
Right now, we just finished watching the last season of Picard and really enjoyed that.
Yep.
I'm watching Yellow Jackets, huge fan of Yellow Jackets.
Obsessed.
Oh my God, the last season of Barry, the last season of Mrs. Maisel. All my favorite shows are ending this year.
I know.
And it's killing me.
I know.
But oh my God, Mrs. Maisel, like, that show, it's so specific in like its tone and its style, but I'm obsessed with it. Yeah. Barry's incredible. If I could write for any show on TV, it would be Barry.
That's tight.
Like, please, like, if only they could give it five
seasons. If they
can
survive. I mean, he's in jail right now.
It's the last season right now, but it's just so, like,
good.
It's just perfect. Yeah, it's fabulous.
I lied. One last question. Do you write to music?
Yes, I do.
What kind of music?
I write to binaural beats.
Oh.
I can't write to lyrics. Do you write to music, Mel?
No, absolutely not.
Just the quiet of the room.
I just write to the sound of my own regrets.
I hear that. Why did I do this to myself? Why did I choose this career?
All right, before we go, where can people follow you at? You're on Twitter. What is the Twitter?
I'm on Twitter. The Twitter handle is Lex Woj Tran. That's LexWojTran.
And her script, It's a Wonderful Life, is out there somewhere on
Blacklist. It's a Wonderful Story.
A Wonderful Story. It's a Wonderful Story. It's based off It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
Is out there on Blacklist.
Yeah.
Out there.
I was giving it away for free, but now I can't because now it's set up with someone.
Oh, yeah,
so,
that's right.
But,
oh,
yeah.
Shit. Well.
Hopefully you'll see it someday on screen.
We will.
We absolutely will.
We will.
That's right.
Saeed. Another good episode.
Another amazing episode.
I know. What are we telling the people to do these days?
You know, we're telling them, get yourself over to Spotify. Get yourself over to Apple Podcasts. Rate us 5 stars. Don't go lower than 5. Why would you do that? This is free. Free.
Yeah, why even waste the time? Just hit the first.
This is a lot of knowledge for free.
That's what I'm
saying.
Yeah.
We literally just got a PhD. Not for us. We're paying for this. But for you, listener, it's free. So the least you can do is give us 5 stars. Give us a glowing review. We will shout you out here on the podcast. Yes. We love you. We do this for you.
All right. Till next time. Two Writers.
Talking shit.
Yeah. Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumpler. Our producer is Kayla Guest. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.